Mini-episode 880 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at Sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late-night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to mini episode number 880 of the FDH Lounge. Back on today with one of our favorite recurring guests. He is an expert on all things pop culture and fitness. Certainly, if you want to get some nice six-pack abs, he can tell you about that. If you want to know what's happening with pop culture awards ceremonies, we always do this at least twice a year for the Academy Awards and the Emmys and whatever other things strike our fancy. Great friend of the show, John Baystyle. Always a pleasure to get him back on. We're going to be breaking down this year's TV awards here, the Emmys, and going through everything that happened the other night and getting his thoughts on that. John, a pleasure to have you on, as always, my friend. How are you today?
I look forward to award shows simply to be on your show, Rick.
Well, we love having you here, no question about it. And, I look forward to these conversations that we have. And I know that one of the things that we always talk about that you're always very well plugged into is everything going on with the red carpet. And as somebody who doesn't tend to watch as much of the stuff myself, but more so just kind of cram and prepare after the fact, as I was going through, again, I think we've talked about this before, the thing that will always be the standard to which we hold all of these things here as far as, and you know where I'm going already, Ashley Graham at one of these shows, it was like 2 or 3 years ago, they said she looked like a blood sausage, her being a plus-size model in a very, very tight outfit that was cut with holes in it, and perhaps not the most flattering of outfits, and that's certainly not the most flattering of descriptions. I think she's going to continue to hold that title after this show as far as most interesting, if unfortunate, description, because from what I was reading, the New York Times was describing this as really sort of a old Hollywood throwback kind of a night. You didn't have as much in the way of actresses out there with these eye-catching kind of things, or somebody trying to look like a Tyrannosaurus or whatever the case may be, as some of these ones will do with their, you know, clever outfits here. Didn't seem to be as much of that, but I know you've always got an eye for, even when it's like that, whatever the exceptions to the rule are and whoever's kind of standing out.
There were a number of standouts. I mean, I think Nicole Kidman was a huge standout, in Red Dress. I mean, that was definitely old Hollywood glamour. That was almost like something out of a Marilyn Monroe movie. You almost imagine Nicole Kidman with that, the flared bottom and everything standing over the vent like Marilyn Monroe in that epic shot that she did, which was really cool. I personally, Jessica Biel, who I have not seen in forever, channeled her inner country music star. And I mean that in a very good way, because the hair was huge, and you know, the higher the hair, the closer to God. and the thing is, she looks stunning. And I went to check, check tweets as we do, to see what's going on. It was so sad, because I saw all these tweets about Jessica Biel. I mean, a lot of people said how great she was. Like, ooh, Dickie ran out of her cage tonight. Dickie let her out of the room tonight. It was just sort of that, because she sort of got lost in the shuffle. When she started out, she was, what was the show she was on? She became famous, Seven Heaven?
I think so.
The one with the guy who was, later on, for doing all sorts of bad things.
The kid toucher.
I don't want to go into.
Yeah.
There you go. Thank you for saving me from saying that. but I mean, she was a major TV star with growing in popularity as a movie star, and then she married Justin Timberlake, and nobody really saw her. And I've seen talk show hosts always say, they'll see her on the red carpet, they'll see a picture, and they always see her as an also-ran or the wife of. And I thought that was such a demotion from where she was, because she had made her own way in Hollywood. And I think she came back and reclaimed that to a large degree, over the at the Emmy Awards. And I think part of that is because of the new TV series that she's in now, where she's getting a lot of accolades for. And she dressed to size, and I think she definitely did.
I think you're right about that, and I think you're as far as her profile and everything. And again, I think in the time leading up to not just her marriage but her engagement, I think again we tend to forget about this. But yeah, I mean she was at a fairly decent point as far as being I would say a full fledged movie star,
better
really.
Decent.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Better than decent. She was lauded as one of the most talented and beautiful.
Yes.
Women at that time on TV, and you heard nothing about her, absolutely nothing.
Yeah, yeah, and that's a shame because you know somebody who maybe takes a lower profile for a period of time, choosing to devote herself to family life. Again, these are laudable things on a human level. So it's a shame if anybody tends to pay the price on a professional level for that. But you're right. I think there's been a little bit of a reassertion of her career, and I think we've seen that a little bit. And to draw a point of comparison here from the red carpet, this is something that may or may not apply, and I would be very interested to get your perspective on this as far as the overall theme of the awards here, which, again, not really a surprise to anybody that the first Emmys of the Trump administration, much like the first Oscars, were dominated by a lot of political commentary up on stage there, folks having things to say, all of that kind of stuff. There was a little bit of an undertone in what I was reading online of a sense of some pundits feeling like perhaps a lot of the, and again, I keep saying actresses because for all intents and purposes, actors show up and what they wear is pretty interchangeable. It's just variations on a tux, variations on a suit. We're here to talk about the actresses and the directions that they choose to go in. And that there was a sense, perhaps for a lot of them, these are more somber times. These are serious times. Can't be wearing a Big Bird outfit to the awards show here. I am a serious person with serious things to say. So do you get the sense that there was any kind of sense of the moment that we're in as a country and as a society, perhaps dictating the fashion choices to some of these actresses that, again, everybody wants to be taken very seriously if they have political commentary out there, and that might have kind of pervaded a little bit of a sense of what they might wear so as not to give somebody an invitation to dismiss them out of nowhere?
Well, I would wait until the MTV VMAs and the MTV Movie Awards before I make that judgment, because that's where you usually see the most outrageous outfits. And I'm saying that half jokingly and half seriously. I mean, Emmys, you don't really see people dressing as Big Bird to the Emmys, unless it's somebody.
Right.
And even then, I think, what was it, one of the music awards where Bjork came dressed as like a swan or
right.
a stork or something and had like the whole bird neck? I mean, I don't remember the Emmys. You can wear a bad dress, you can wear a loud dress, but I don't remember, men coming dressed as Darth Vader and women coming dressed with Princess Leia hair. I mean, to be outrageous. Like you'll see a lot of times people coming in an egg like Lady Gaga at one of the MTV Awards. I think when there's political unrest and there's political dissent, I think everybody tries to tie things to it and tries to tie people's reactions to it. I mean, a lot of the actors who are intelligent, when they speak and what they're wearing, I mean, their words ring true with what they're saying, and you respect them for their words. Another person who's maybe not as bright could dress up stunningly conservatively, but looking totally beautiful, but as soon as he or she opens their mouth, you realize what a fool they are. So I don't think it was a conscious effort to say, ooh, these are challenging political times. We have to be thought of as, more serious. I mean, there was still glamour. There was still glitz. Some of the women look absolutely stunning. I mean, Jane Fonda came out with in the 9 to 5 tribute, and everyone was saying like an ageless wonder because she gets better, each year. And with a hot pink dress and everything, I certainly wouldn't consider that, serious or understated, for a woman of any age to be in a bright hot pink dress, with, sort of Ariana Grande type hair. But the bottom line is, they dress and they present themselves in a way that's going to get them, or what they think is going to get them, the most attention. And even going back to the Ashley Graham comment that you made earlier, we're talking about it. Can you name who was the best dressed that year?
No.
Whatever she did right.
Now, you're right about that. I mean, although, again, yeah, I suppose Hollywood is one of these just spell my name right kind of businesses. So, you know, that makes sense. But, yeah, I knew you would have something interesting to say when I, as you always do, but when I set that up for you there, because I really wanted to kind of get your thoughts on drawing that distinction there, because, again, it was, and you're going to get politics at these shows, you know, quite frankly, from Hollywood any year. But this is just a thing where, you know, you knew going in, bet the over on the amount of politics that there would be, and I think the over ended up cashing off pretty handsomely here. But it's a thing, too, where in terms of looking at it and the general mood of things, there's something that really kind of strikes me that I think, yeah, from an outside observation, that I don't think necessarily the awards folks, the actors and actresses involved, anybody really in Hollywood would probably appreciate the analogy. I don't think they would, but nevertheless, I'm going to make it. And that is, I look at what they're doing, and it was a perfectly executed kind of thing from their point of view. I understand it's planned out in advance what networks these are going to be on, whatever, but CBS, that dictates it's going to be Colbert hosting the thing. He's pretty much made that his niche over the last 9 months or so, on which way he's going to go on stuff. It's funny because for as much as everybody talks about Trump narrow casting to his, whatever you want to call it, 35% or whatever the case may be, it seems to me that there is the exact same thing going on the other side. Seth Meyers has been honest enough to say, you know, there's probably not anybody who voted for Trump who watches his show anymore. Now, these shows have been successful in terms of supersizing their target audience, and they're preaching to an ever bigger choir by being able to lure in people who agree with the point of view. But it's interesting to me that it seems to be a mirror effect on one side of the spectrum from the White House and the other end of the spectrum from the entertainment industry of preaching to the choir, the folks that already agree with you on stuff, pretty much writing off the party of the country that doesn't. And you hope that some folks in the middle come with you, but there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of effort being made by either of the branches here, be at the White House or be at the entertainment industry, in terms of trying to lure that middle their way.
But I also think that, I mean, everybody misses the point when it comes to that. I mean, first of all, going for Trump jokes is low-hanging fruit. So, I mean, while some people thought, ooh, there was political stuff, I think at a point you get numb to it.
Right.
I mean, after the first award shows, during the you know, during the whole primary and the elect procedures, I was more, it was more jaw dropping personally to me. I mean, I didn't find any Trump joke memorable. You know, in this particular award show, I mean, the only one that had a little bit of thing that I thought was when Alec Baldwin won, and he commented, "Mr. Trump, now you have your Emmy," because Trump, you know, famously, you know, they belittled him, you know, because he said he deserved an Emmy and he never got one for The Apprentice. So, I mean, that one rang true, but that one, because it related to Hollywood. That's why it rang true to me. Whereas the other nonsense that goes back and forth between it, I mean, we've all heard it before. I mean, I'm the least political person there is, but you have a country completely divided. You already saw, you've already the same opinions when the election, they didn't matter, they didn't hold water then, and you deviated. And I think that's the great world, we could try to come together and work with each other rather than just continuing to be divisive constantly, day in and day out, and just constantly focusing and featuring and harping on our differences, when we could do so much more and move in such a more positive direction. We try to work together, a happy medium. I mean, this is what happened. This is the election debate, whether you want how the electoral college works or whatever. That's the system we have in place. He's elected. He's there. Move forward. You do the best. Don't keep trying constantly. Nothing gets done, and it just creates more animosity and more division.
I agree with that. And you and I were kind of joking about it during the Oscars review that we were doing here. And I'm paraphrasing because I don't remember the exact example of this. But, you know, people who honestly believe in their heart of hearts, oh my God, we are just one more outraged Janine Garofalo commentary on Sedan away from impeaching this president. I mean, there's a lot of people that actually believe that, and that their words have that kind of impact, and that people share their sense of outrage on all of this. And again, it tends to be something where You've really got the silos on both sides here, and the whole 9-to-5 thing that you briefly touched on before there, when Jane Fonda was out there, even that moment sort of encapsulated a lot of the divisions in and of itself. Jane Fonda and Lily Tomlin pretty much went where you would expect them to go with this kind of stuff. Dolly Parton was just kind of standing there because every sense that I have of her is that she's probably not sharing those opinions very much based on what we've always heard about her anyways, but
she
was still
showcase it.
Well, yeah,
she
yeah.
She doesn't live by it, and she doesn't showcase it and use that as the only weapon in her arsenal or the only thing to define her. I mean, you're also at an award show. It's supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be lighthearted. I mean, when the political commentary was made in the past, it always got bad reviews.
Right.
It never got the positive thing. I mean, and granted, obviously, if you're talking to an audience that all hates one person, you're also looking for the lowest hanging fruit, the easiest way to get a laugh, the easiest way to get support, and the easiest way to be liked. So of course, you're going to go and say the same thing, and everybody's going to applaud you. It's like how Rudy Gervais always used to say, you know, at these award shows, it's just, you know, it's just self, self-obsessed people that are just congratulating each other and patting each other on the back.
Exactly.
And giving each other awards. And he would always belittle it in a joking way. But some of those words rang true. So, of course, if you have the same beliefs as somebody, you know exactly what to say to get that support, and you're not going to deviate from it because you want that, those accolades, you want that praise, and you want that adoration.
Well, again, you know, and I follow politics very closely. I have very strong, defined points of view. I love humor, obviously, but again, I'm like you. I'm jaded by political humor because so much of it is just kind of the low-hanging fruit kind of thing. But, you know, the thing with the silos, it really does go both ways, because the thing about Dolly Parton is she was taking a lot of grief on Facebook from her fans who, again, I think by and large come from the other side of the spectrum vis-a-vis Fonda and Tomlin, as, again, we suspect that she does but don't know for sure because, like you said, she's very circumspect about that.
She's in Forge, Tennessee. She's Middle America.
Yeah.
But she knows how to handle her. I've always been back to Dolly Parton. In fact, I mean, one of the quotes I always live by with her, the way I, when I have a project or I'm working on something, I remember when I was a little kid hearing her or reading about her, when she does an album, she goes to a cabin in the woods and doesn't leave the cabin in the woods until she finishes the album, because she wants to just have the bare necessities, and she wants to be, because she thinks better when she's hungry and basically in survival mode as opposed to happy and content at home. And that's the exact same way I am when I go for something. I want to be focused completely on what I'm doing, and I don't want to be worried about, you know, other types of distractions and fun things while I'm trying to get something accomplished. And it was just so impressive to me how I would read these things. She'd go, where she just had the bare necessities, and she had nothing to eat, and she always wanted to be lean and hungry to finish her albums. So, and I think that's the way she also lives her life in a way, trying to always. If she lives on Southern rule, like my family in Off Alabama does. If you don't got something nice to say about somebody, then don't open your mouth.
Right.
Well, that's why you can keep guessing her. I mean, I think she plays her best, and I think she handles the situation better than most.
This is very interesting because you're telling a lot of stuff that I didn't know about her, and I would dare say most people didn't know about her. So very, very interesting. But and again, somebody who you know, in terms of the pop culture image of her, very circumspect about her politics, if not her cleavage at all times. But as far as that goes, though, it's funny because, like I said, she took a lot of heat on Facebook because a lot of her fans and followers have that distinct point of view, and are like, how could you just stand up there when those two pigs were slandering our president? So, you know, she, in trying to be circumspect and whatever, first of all, that ain't going to do anything for her career to stand up there and disagree with those two live on national TV. Second of all, again, I think she realized it wasn't the time and the place. She was trying to take the high road on stuff, whatever, but when you talk about the polarization that we're in, when she stands up there and tries to take the high road and just basically doesn't engage in any of that stuff, that's still not good enough for some people.
Oh, come on. She's a public figure. You could be Mother Teresa flying down from heaven, saving an orphanage while also finding homes for a bunch of abandoned puppies, and put out a video on YouTube, and the first comment would be sucks, the second comment would be bitch, and the third comment would be an ad for erectile is doing anything, you're going to get haters. So if you're in the limelight, if you make an opinion, if you don't say something that's still implying an opinion, there's always going to be people that love you for it, and there's always going to be people that hate you for it. And I think Dolly Parton rises above that. I mean, I go back to Joel. I'll give Joel Osteen credit for this saying: eagles don't mess with crows. In the sense, you know, eagles don't worry about what crows are doing. They just fly above them. Like when a crow bothers an eagle in the sky, rather than killing the crow or chasing the crow or basically changing its own plans to attack the crow, the eagle just flies to an altitude that's too high for the crow to handle. And that's, I think, what Dolly Parton does. She's very classy, and I think people don't give her enough credit for that. And she handles herself very, very well in public situations while still leaving people cheerful and happy. You know, she always has a smile on her face. She's always saying something positive, and if she doesn't have something nice to say, she'll try to say something nice. And if that doesn't work, she'll change the subject.
Absolutely. And a role model for how you should handle yourself in so many of these situations. Very well said about her. And as far as it goes, again, with some of the awards themselves here, I actually, you know what, strike that. Before we get into that, I do want to touch one more thing on the politics of this whole thing here, because it might have been the biggest pop culture moment of the whole thing here. A moment of great water cooler conversation, subsequently debate in the blogosphere about the propriety of normalizing such an individual, but Sean Spicer coming out for his surprise appearance that he had arranged with Colbert, coming out there sort of playing into the whole Melissa McCarthy thing here with the podium.
The movie podium, oh yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
so, I mean,
he called Melissa McCarthy, and I thought he played really well, and that was, people hate the fact that you and I have spent death. His party and how politically, you know, he's going to be seriously doing it, because he's just between a rock and a hard place with the whole thing. But at least he didn't slur his words, and at least he came off as doing a good bit. So he can always fall back on that, and it was comedy, and just walk out of the room.
Yeah, and again, it was something where it was polarizing afterwards. There are some people who appreciated it. There are some people who did not. But again, in between the red...
Whatever, everyone talks about it.
That's
whatever.
True. That's
polarizing,
true.
Polarizing gets rating. Polarizing makes stars.
Yeah, yeah. And that was, I think, designed to be the moment we would all be talking about afterwards. And it certainly was, I think, as far as the single moment that got the most amount of attention. But as is always the case with these things, in between the red carpet, all of the political commentary on stage, this, that, whatever, there are actual awards given out at these shows. And one of the things that kind of struck me here in terms of somebody who has been, I would say, a significant pop culture figure throughout the course of her career, I believe this was an unprecedented sixth time in a row, Julia Louis-Dreyfus winning the VEEP Outstanding Lead Actress in a Comedy Series. It's one of these things where we've talked about this previously on the show. I've talked about this with some of the TV critics that have been on subsequently. I will cop to, and by the way, Ben Lyons has copped to the same thing here, liking some of the post-Seinfeld projects that were out there that you had Michael Richards in, and some of the other ones that were out there. I'm trying to, Jason Alexander had some out there. I was kind of entertained by some of these ones here, but there was this sense for a while of, are any of these guys ever going to break out? Is there ever going to be anything that comes along after Seinfeld? Versus, it's a thing now. It just kind of struck me where you hear these perspectives, like, kids that are born today have no idea. Like, somebody born in the year 2000, it might be a piece of trivia. Like, hey, does Julia Louis-Dreyfus from Veep, did you know she was one of the key players on Seinfeld back in the day?
Why don't we go back a little further? She did a double peep as far as that goes. She was also one of these players on Saturday Night Live.
Yes.
How many people have a career or a lasting career after Saturday Night Live?
Yes.
She not only went on huge success on Saturday Night Live, huge success on Seinfeld, to even huger spotlight success on Veep as a star, as basically the spearhead starring vehicle, the steering vehicle of that whole entire show. She is the focal point of it. Her career is, I mean, in a word, legendary, and I don't use that lightly. But everybody thinks about Saturday Night Live too, and so many people say the Saturday Night Live curse. So many people say the song, so many people say the Friends curse. Whenever you have this huge turnout of a show that's a household name and so successful that has an ensemble cast, well, very people can see who's going to be the breakout star and if anybody's going to have any longevity at all. And most of them don't. And there's very, very few that have a breakout potential. And I don't know of anyone off the top of my head, I mean, there probably is somebody, but that's had that type of potential after two such huge shows that were both ensemble shows.
Oh, by the way, something neither you nor I has mentioned yet, but I will. In between those two projects, long-lasting projects, The New Adventures of Old Christine, I believe it was called, which is a show that was on CBS long enough, I believe, to reach the syndication level. So she was on the air long enough for that show there. Again, not a ratings blockbuster, but a solid show for many years. That again, once you've made it to the syndication point, you know, you are a successful TV project. That's what they all aim for. Get that five or six seasons in, whatever the case may be. She made it on that one there. So not one, but two significant projects after Seinfeld. Yeah, hats off to her, no question.
And on all different platforms, too. Which, I mean, and to get going with Veep and everything, it's that, I'm predicting six, though. That's unbelievable. And of course, I had a feeling, I mean, I didn't think she was going to lose this year because it is the last year of Veep. And, I mean, even though she won all those times, it looked like a period at the end of a very, very poignant sentence, so to speak. And I just knew there was no that was going to be deep as far as the best comedy series.
Right. And so I thought that was interesting. And again, always looking for the things that are significant from a pop culture perspective when you and I are talking about this. Something that I thought, again, there were a lot of people that were focusing on the politics, obviously, in a year like this with The Handmaid's Tale winning the drama series. Elizabeth Moss is outstanding lead actress as she continues this great post-Mad Men role that she's on. But it's a thing, to me, where, again, I'm somebody who has Hulu, who I'm always trying to sell my friends on it, and I've seen in the last couple of days here people saying this may be a turning point. The irony is I haven't watched The Handmaid's Tale. It doesn't seem like my kind of a project, whether it be, you know, in the politics or some of the other type stuff out there, but there are some series that they've had and original ones that I've really loved, like The Path and Shuteye, and it's where you can watch all the old episodes of Rick and Morty, and there's just so much stuff on there, right down to some of the foreign series, too. There are some Australian sitcoms on there that are actually pretty hilarious that, like, most people probably don't even bother to watch. But Hulu, to me, again, it's in the shadow of Netflix. It probably always will be because Netflix is such a monster. But what are your thoughts about this as far as a potential turning point in terms of getting people to be like, oh, Hulu, oh, they got some interesting stuff there?
Every platform, I think my feeling is like it is with any platform. When you walk in the middle of Times Square, when these platforms get started, and especially with the clutter that's in the digital age and you know, the age of TV and stuff like that, half the people, if the people in Times Square don't even know the platform, they're certainly not going to be able to name any show on it. So when all of a sudden there is a breakout show on a new platform, it is immense the impact that will have on the platform, unless something very oddly goes wrong. But every one of those platforms needs one or two breakout shows. Just look at HBO when it first started, and then it would always have each season a one or two or more breakout shows, and it was always thought of as new, on edge, even though, and they pushed to a large degree, and they did things that weren't allowed on traditional TV, and they opened up the box a little bit, but, you know, it means that little bit of difference in getting critical acclaim and getting mainstream exposure is bad. Who couldn't have asked for something better than that? Because to stand out from those other shows, I've been watching a show on Hulu, and I'm in the business. But then, you know, seeing that, it makes it a player. It makes it a contender.
Yeah. I think that's absolutely right, and I think it is going to have that kind of significance. And again, there is, it's going to open people's eyes, I think, to a lot of the really good programming that's on there, be it their own catalog or be it the catalog of shows that are being hosted on there that were originally debuted or shown on TV somewhere else. It was interesting as well in terms of looking at some of the pop culture subtexts here. People going to the whole thing this year of the amount of diversity as far as some of the winners of some of the different awards. Aziz Ansari winning for Master of None for Outstanding Writer for a Comedy Series. So he was getting some runs for that.
With Lena Waithe, yeah.
Yes, the two of them both winning on that. Outstanding Lead Actor in a Limited Series or Movie, Riz Ahmed from The Night Of on HBO. Certainly Donald Glover for a show that's gotten a lot of attention, Atlanta.
Wow.
And him winning for Outstanding Lead Actor in a Comedy Series, a real breakout from, again, you talk about being part of an ensemble like he was on Community, to really breaking out legitimately on a project that's based around him.
Outfit. I mean, first of all, purple's my favorite color. But the fact that he wore the purple tux and won the awards, you couldn't have planned something better. Because what did you just say several minutes ago when we started this chat? You said, "Oh, well, all the guys are sort of like, you know, cookie cutters. You know, it's the same thing. We got to talk about the women because they have variety and they can do different things. That's why the red carpet's all about the women. All you have to do is do one little thing differently." And also have that critical acclaim and what I call the gravitas or the credibility of winning those awards. And he was the most memorable person of that night to me, completely. And I've seen episodes of Atlanta. I even saw they had I was flipping channels and he was in one of the Channing Tatum movies with Jada Pinkett Smith and one of the Magic Mike movies. So he goes from that to critical acclaim in Atlanta, where he not only wins Best Actor. Scott wins Best Director. That guy can write his own ticket now.
You're right about that. He's got a very bright future in front of him here, and it goes to, like you said, his ability to be versatile and to be able to execute things in a wide range of ways here. And again, you look at some of the other actors that are in that category as well, some of the other nominees. Jeffrey Tambor from Transparent. That's a guy that I've enjoyed in a lot of different roles. Again, he has shown himself as somebody who has an ability to do a lot of different things. William H. Macy, that's probably the first thing anybody thinks of when they think of him, is just the wider variety of things that he can play. He was nominated for Frank Gallagher on Shameless. And again, one of my favorite actors as well, this was for Outstanding Lead Actor in a Drama Series. He did not win because Sterling K. Brown winning for This Is Us, which, again, one of the hottest shows of the last year in terms of critical acclaim and breakout success. But somebody who got edged out in this category here, Bob Odenkirk, you talk about somebody that has shown an ability to really kind of stretch himself. I don't know that in his wildest dreams he would have thought that he would have been nominated for Outstanding Lead Actor in a Drama Series upon starting Better Call Saul, which is a series that I love. Loved him, of course, in Breaking Bad. And that was a thing where even in Breaking Bad, he showed more drama out of him than you would typically see, because he is somebody who, prior to this, had been best known as a sketch actor, comedy actor, somebody that really just had those great comedic chops, but first in Breaking Bad in situational parts here, and now for most of Better Call Saul, where it's been kind of serious here. You talk about actors who really, and actresses who really have to be able to kind of stretch themselves to have that great kind of success. This is a guy who very late in his career has shown a side of himself that nobody knew that he had, and to hear him say it in interviews, maybe not even himself.
Yeah, but the thing about him and so many actors, I mean, these are people that I call in this industry, I think there's workhorses and showboats.
Yep.
And either one is better than the other, okay? But a workhorse is around constantly, constantly. He may not get the accolades. Relevance is not on the cover of Us Weekly, but they are making bank with every movie. They could be cast in 10 movies a year, 12 movies a year. When the show pony just has one movie and gets 100 times the recognition that they have for the 12 movies, but they keep going. And you have no idea the talent and versatility and also range of the workforce until you give that workforce the opportunity to show. And I think that he's one of those people like that. He could play lead. He could play a character. He could play any type of role, drama, comedy. And a lot of people, like, especially in Hollywood and in the rest of the world, like to pigeonhole people, so they don't immediately think that. So if you first make it on the scene as a comedy actor or a sketch actor, they don't think of you as casting you in one of these other roles until you hit it out of the park, like he does with Better Call Saul. And then, of course, the new generation is going to think, he does comedy? You know, so that's why you just got to stay in the game long enough, because you will experience every type of feeling you can possibly imagine in this business. if you just stay around long enough and don't quit. Because what do we always say? The media loves to hail you. The media loves to nail you. It's the same as the industry goes. I remember back in the day when I was a little kid, Mel Gibson, they called him the ultimate piece of beef. They called him this great actor. He was like a heartthrob. Now they call him, there was one headline I saw calling him a crazy anti-Semite. And they make fun of him in jokes. Time changes a lot of things.
Absolutely. It really, really does. Yeah, that's, you know, you talk about anybody that might not remember that he did comedy. Again, this is one of these things where I try to have a good sense of humor about this in terms of people who can really make you feel old with their takes. I go back to not quite a year ago on Twitter when the Rams moved to Los Angeles. I guess it was about 2 years ago, not quite 2 years ago. And some guy, and I clicked through to his Twitter profile, and as I guessed, he was probably about in his mid-20s. He was like, the Los Angeles Rams? That doesn't even sound right. And I'm sitting here going, are you kidding me? Is this a rib? Are people out there deliberately in a conspiracy to make me feel old?
Just to bring it to a little personal level of something that happened, which is, you know, bizarre, but is very apropos to this point. I was at an event with some other family members the other day, and my uncle comes up to me, and he says, oh, John, you know, what happened? I used to see you all the time on those TV commercials. You were always on the TV with Fitness Made Simple, and every time I turned the TV on, I couldn't to any channel without seeing you. Go, what happened to you? I haven't seen you on anything. without skipping a beat, and of course I'm thinking to myself, like, oh, shut the hell up, you dumbass, the whole time. But anyway, without skipping a beat, his son comes running up, doesn't know the conversation, he just got this, and he goes, oh my God, John, you're everywhere. He goes, you're everywhere, I see you everywhere. He goes, you're all over Instagram, you were all over Vine, you're all over YouTube. And it just goes to show you, it matters where you're watching, and it matters the times. You know, things change, and one generation can see you as exceedingly relevant, or another generation who may have seen you as exceedingly relevant 5 years ago, you know, thinks you're unknown now when you've just changed and you've gone on to something else. It's the same exact things with these actors. You may go from comedy to drama. They go from being loved by the media to being a pariah.
Yeah, and that's, it shows you,
time
again,
is a bitch.
Yeah, I mean, and that's an incredible story there, to have gotten these two completely diverse examples there in terms of reactions right back-to-back from family members there.
Back-to-back, unplanned, and that's why I bring it up. It was just to, you know, echo this situation, because first of all, I wanted to punch my uncle so bad in the face with a closed-fist punch. You know, I was standing there freaking sweating at this event outside in the backyard and just feeling the sweat just drip down my armpit. And he's saying, I never see you on anything. You know, I was just looking at him, what are you, an unemployed loser? And then all of a sudden, without me having to defend myself, which I wasn't going to do anyway, you know, whatever, just, you know, explain it briefly, he probably wouldn't understand, and then just walk away. But his own son comes running up screaming, you know, oh my God, you're everywhere. And he's still, like, hit the ground, but he really had no clue. He just had no clue. And it's just because times have changed, and I think also exactly what you're talking about with the Hulu, HBO, back in the day, and I'll quote like Gary Vaynerchuk now, who I've been watching a lot of his stuff and find him very motivating. He goes, back in the day when I was growing up, you know, ABC, NBC, CBS were the only networks. You know, then came, and before that there was radio, and then after the network school, then came cable, who eclipsed them. And now all of a sudden the new networks are Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. And everybody's glued to their phone, and that's the new source of our information. Things change. And that's why I think I applaud people who are able to stay relevant in different times, even if it's different generations, and one generation may lose track of you, to stay relevant in different times and make a living and also make an impact, because that shows real skill, and that shows real ability to adapt, and there's so few people that would even take the time to learn the skills that are needed to adapt to a changing time, to a changing marketplace.
Absolutely. And again, you look at how things are changing, and it's always an interesting snapshot year by year in terms of the scoreboard here. But you look at the most major awards won this year by network, HBO with 10, NBC 6, Hulu 5, Netflix 4, FX2. So the ones in third and fourth place are actually streaming services now that are, but again, you know, functioning for all intents and purposes as Netflix. Nowhere in there, of course, CBS hosting the show this year. Awkward.
There you go. Well, come on. What's the one elephant in the room we're not even talking about? The hosts of the late night shows, and they even came on to joke about it, Jimmy Kimmel and Colbert, upset in all the major awards by John Oliver.
Yes.
Who half the people who are not in the audience didn't even know who he was. I mean, I have friends of mine who are in the business, you know, in entertainment, who barely know who he is. And as they even came on joking, they go, oh, well, his show is so good. It's so high quality that it takes all week just to produce one, you know, as opposed to them having to grind it out every day. And John Oliver walked home with all the pretty pennies in that category.
Right.
So, you know, and that's just amazing. And it shows the changing times. You know, it's not just the people you'd expect, and it's not the people with the biggest range behind them and the biggest, you know, history behind them. Because a lot of times history can also be a bitch, and the thing is, you know, people want something new. I mean, even in my building now, when you go downstairs to, you know, where the security desk is and where the greeters are and the concierge and everything like that, there's not, it used to be, you know, people would be watching like a little TV hooked up to cable, you know, that's hooked up to the, you know, lobby area. Now, they're on their own smartphone, they're on their own little tablet, and everybody's looking at Hulu. Everybody's looking at Netflix. There's not a, and when I talk to the security people and the people that are downstairs in the lobby doing other things, they don't even have cable in their houses.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that are cord cutters and are completely partaking of their entertainment in that way. And there was something else, of course, that transpired.
By the way, what happened to make that so popular is I think binge watching was the smartest thing that any TV service could have done to give people the opportunity to be able to consume content on their schedules rather than having to wait till Wednesday of each week to see the new episode. Well, I think that's a lot of advertisers who are paying top dollar for those spots in that particular view of a show. But was like the best thing that could have happened for a new network like a Hulu or a Netflix or something to gain new customers. Because that's the one thing they could offer that people wanted that they couldn't get from other services.
One of the things that I'm really proud of is as far as talking about this on the show and feeling like I was ahead of the curve a couple of years ago, myself and one of our show contributors, our FDH Director of Research, Nate Noy, actually, when we were talking about Breaking Bad, because we've done season-by-season mm-hmm. coverage of a couple of different shows here, whether it be Breaking Bad, Fargo, Better Call Saul, Justified, etc. So we're going through, we were talking about that, and he had a different experience than I did because he watched Breaking Bad, and we were talking about the previous season. He had just binged on it completely right before our conversation. He hadn't seen it yet, and I said to him at the time, it was one of those things where, like, you know, that would be fun to watch, but for me, part of the experience always was 11 o'clock on a Sunday night, and it's like, holy crap, how am I going to go to bed now? You know, like the episode where Hank gets shot out in the parking lot there, he's got the two guys stalking him, or, you know, the previous one out that, you know, where Walt and Jesse are in the RV and they're about to get busted. I mean, to me, that was like half the draw of the show. Was like, you know, how are you going to wait for next week to get here, especially the last 8 episodes of the show? So we were talking about this like back in 2014, and I'm pretty proud of that because you didn't hear as much conversation at the time about binge watching and that kind of stuff. Or actually, I guess it was longer ago than 2014 because must have been 2012 even. Wow, yeah, because 2012, I don't think anybody was really talking about binge watching. But yeah, now it's one of these things where we just kind of like take it for granted in our lives.
Completely. And I think it did two things. First of all, it was great for consumers that wanted to do, consume that content on their own time, which is, you know, eventually everybody, because everybody is now, with the social media age growing bigger, everybody is more of a me type of generation. They're all focused on being their own stars or at least controlling their own world. And this fit in perfectly with that game plan. But it made TV less magical because what you just talked about was called destination programming. You would have to go be awake at 10 o'clock till 11 o'clock or whatever to watch that show, or 11 to 12 to watch that show. And you knew that it was so important, and it was never going to change. That's the time it was, because accommodate your schedule to it. So that gave the show more gravitas. Even though people like binge watch, and it's wonderful to spend cold, rainy Saturday catching up on a whole series so you don't have to worry about, you know, watching it over a 13-week span, to me at least, it lessens the importance or the gravitas of the show, or the power that I think the show has, by the fact that it's now available at my whim, as opposed to me having to, you know, do something special to enjoy it. So I think that also brings the shows down more to a digital level, in the sense of people's minds, which I think is also part of the reason why you're seeing things like YouTube and other types of online streaming platforms and Facebook and video there getting numbers bigger than TV and stuff like that. And that also now puts multi-million-dollar productions by an NBC, CBS, ABC on the same level as some kid in Iowa putting up a YouTube video.
Yeah,
very. A user across the world has the ability to watch either on a digital platform.
That's right. That's right. Indicative of changing times. And along those lines, one of the things for which the year 2016 was most famous for, obviously, yes, the presidential election, but the big array of celebrity passings in 2016, and has somewhat abated in 2017, but we are remembered, or we're reminded, I should say, when we get the in memoriam thing here at the Emmys, just what that role has been. Deep breath here. These are the names that were focused on it the other night. Glenn Campbell, June Foley, Ed Green, Mike Connors, Zsa Zsa Gabor, Chuck Barris, Chris Beardy, Brad Gray, Frank Konisberg, Powers Booth, Jeannie Gunn, Adam West, John Hurd, Gary Glassberg, Roger Ailes, Agnes Nixon, Robert Osborne, Jay Thomas, Nelson Ellis, Mark Schlegel, Norman Brokaw, Don Olmeyer, Robert Vaughn, Bill Paxton, Roger Moore, Carrie Fisher, Debbie Reynolds, John Hurt, Gwen Ifill, Grant Tinker, Stanley Callis, Sandy Gallen, Miguel Feller, Martin Landau, Richard Hatch, Alan Thicke, Florence Henderson, Jerry Lewis, Don Rickles, Mary Tyler Moore. Some uber mega legends on that list, and just such an amazing roll call of great talents that have passed from this dusty spinning globe since the last time they did this 12 months ago.
Amen, and rest in peace to all of them. That is,
yes.
It's always a very sobering moment to me of the award shows when that is shown. It really puts everything into perspective as far as, you know, the industry, and also, just seeing people that you may have grown up watching, or even if you didn't watch that particular actor or actress that you're seeing, you know of them, and you know of the impact that they've had, and they've made a legacy that their name is recognized. And when you think of so many people, 99.something% of people that are going to pass through this earth of just being a dash between two numbers, that is just a very, very poignant thing, and those people made their mark on the world. And every time I see that for the show, I am just exceedingly humbled by it, and my heart and my I'm so proud of them, and my heart just goes out to them for the accomplishment that they had.
Absolutely, and to be honest with you, it's the kind of thing that I probably should think to flag more often. This is the first time I think I've read off the names or even really acknowledged it to that great of a degree when we were doing a recap, but just because, again, it just really struck me the magnitude of so many of the names that were on that list, and again, the length of it as well, which I think probably is bigger than what you tend to see most other years at any of these awards shows. But again, so many different things that happen here. Again, nothing that really has the lasting pop culture resonance, I would say, of what we saw at the Oscars here with the Steve Harvey-esque ending, but a lot of different interesting things along the way that we found to talk about. Were there any that I missed that you found to be significant?
Well, as always, my friend, you are exceedingly comprehensive, if nothing else. The only thing I wanted to say, I mean, obviously, The Handmaid's Tale was such a huge winner and became a, you know, breakout show, more than a breakout show, a flagship show of, you know, Hulu. And also, obviously, Big Little Lies, it made me actually want to go see that show. I have not seen it, and I loved when Reese Witherspoon says, I think it was her who said it, you can still see it. Or she said it on one of the interview shows. It was just so funny when they were talking about how successful it was and how many awards it won. And for people that didn't see it, they could still see it. but one of the biggest things for me was I am a big fan of Kate McKinnon, and I was so happy to see her win Best Supporting Actress for a Comedy for Saturday Night Live. I think she is one of the most multi-talented, humble, unassuming actresses, comedians of our generation or any generation, and it was just very, very nice to see her recognized. I know a lot of times with the Emmys, you don't see a lot of the Saturday Night Live people to the degree that you saw this year in the award show. I mean, it's a show that always gets huge ratings, it's a show that gets a lot of water cooler talk, but it's not a show that you see have such a presence at the Emmys, you know, with Alec Baldwin and then, you know, obviously, you know, Kate. And it was just really, really, you know, cool to see that. And they also were nominated for so many other awards. It was such a huge year for them. And they even won Best, of course, they won Best Variety and Best Series, which, you know, with Lauren Michaels. So that was amazing.
She is very talented. And again, I think she's, I think, getting this reputation with this cast. You get it with a lot of the ones from some of the past casts, and I remember when we had a debate on the show one time about the best cast members of all time, I ended up casting my vote for Phil Hartman. You always get somebody out there who is regarded as the most versatile of the members of their cast. Phil Hartman, I think, pretty much carried that torch the whole time he was there, and there are a lot of people who will tell you that Kate McKinnon is that person out of this cast.
Are you kidding? She plays Hillary Clinton and Kelly Conway.
Right.
I mean, how much more versatile can you get?
Yeah.
She goes from one extreme to the other, and then she'll play that, you know, that local yokel lady who always has a horrible time no matter what. If everybody was abducted by space aliens and they were treated to great dinners and lavish accommodations, you know, she gets abducted by them and has a rectal exam. I mean, she has such range, and then she can also sit at a piano and sing a song. When you talk about like what you were talking about with Odenkirk, I mean, she has a range that you would never have known if Saturday Night Live did not give her the stage to show it off on. And a lot of the things that she does on that show, aside from the comedy, like the singing and stuff like that, you see that she probably has extremely good drama chops as well.
Yeah, very much so. And again, it wouldn't surprise me if she went on and sort of did the same as Odenkirk and moved into more diverse type roles after she's done with this. And again, that would be really kind of breaking from the norm of Saturday Night Live regulars over a period of time, which have, again, I don't know if I can even think of any examples off the top of my head that have strayed far from comedy. But yeah, it could be very interesting to see if she chooses to go in that direction subsequently when that time of her career comes around and she's looking predominantly at big budget movies and the like. So it will be very interesting to see how that goes. But as is always, my friend, very interesting to recap these awards shows with you. And, you know, for any of the entertainment that folks got out of the 2017 Emmys, I think it's fair to say, in all modesty, that you and I ended up topping that here today.
I love it. I love you. And there's one thing. I cannot leave without saying one thing, though, because one of the elephants in the room that anybody who's looking for a comprehensive list, there's one jaw-dropping moment we did not mention, and we don't need to go into detail because it's for itself, but when Nicole Kidman just full-on kisses Alexander Skarsgård on the mouth when he's accepting an award, blew me away right in front of Keith Urban. That was just one thing that I don't know where it was fit in our intellectual conversation that we had. That's why I did not want to bring it up. But jaw-dropping moment. I'm like, did she just do that? And I was looking on Twitter at all the things, and they would have, like, these GIFs of, like, you know, like, the people making faces, like, huh? What? Like a Scooby-Doo type of reaction. I was just, I mean, full on. And I just watched, and just today, a couple of days after the Emmys, they had, what show was it? I think it was one of the shows on E!, Dish Nation. Dish Nation, talking about, they were actually getting like body language of how, like, you know, she had outstretched hands, but it's not real serious, you know, she didn't touch the back of his head. The fact that they're going into this detail about this kiss, that she's full on kissing another man on the lips in front of her husband. I don't know what industry you're in. You just don't do that.
That is pretty funny. That is noteworthy. And again, I kind of laugh at the notion that you didn't know where to fit that into our conversation.
Not at all.
I've been there. Listen.
We were talking about intellectual things that were so cool, and I love going with it, which is, but I'm just like, when you said that
Listen, John, been there, done that. Been there, done that. I go back to the earliest days of the show, back before the mini episodes, when we were doing full-fledged episodes on the late lamented Sports Talk Network, and we were having multiple guests in the course of a show. And so I'm sitting there with my panelists that we had with us every week in the early shows. We were interviewing military blogger Bill Raggio about his time over in Iraq. This was 2007, and he was talking about his observations of stuff there, and he was talking about military operations around the world, theaters of operation vis-a-vis fighting terrorist groups, whatever. So there was something that I had, and I waited till we were done with him, and I mentioned it to the panelists. I said, you know, this didn't seem appropriate for bringing up with Bill in the midst of a sober conversation, I said, but I noticed that the acronym for this, I think it was a Philippine Muslim terrorist group, was MILF, M-I-L-F, I said. I never saw a place in the conversation when I could have fit that in there. So I've been at that point, John.
That is called an after-credit comment, that you make people sit through the whole movie and the credits, and then add that in. So at least you say, at least they can say, ooh, and they didn't forget it.
Well, the belly laugh that I got from my panelists showed me that I made the right call in terms of saving it for right before we went to commercial break. But, yeah, so I've had to use the same discretion that you did over a period of time. But, again, enjoy the conversation as always. And as I said to you off air and credited you, you know, you are somebody to really sort of become a Yoda of mine as far as new media and, you know, helping to point out possibilities and everything like that. So appreciate it personally as well as professionally, John. Always a pleasure.
Your friend, besides being excellent and one of my favorite hosts to ever work with, so well researched, so personable, that you need to be seen by the biggest audience or heard by the biggest audience possible. So I'm glad to help in any way you think I can.
Working to make that happen, my friend, and you've been a great part of that. I really appreciate it. I appreciate you being on with us today, and thank you everybody for tuning in to FDH Lounge mini episode number 880.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.